Yeah, it's the growing and scaling part that I know is the most troubling aspect for a new operator. I perceive this as a local business. I mean, it certainly started that way.
This is the Self Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years, has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of his incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self Storage Podcast. I am your host, Scott Myers, and today we have on the show, I would like you to welcome to the show our guest, Mr. Scott Zucker. Now, Scott has been, he is a mainstay in the self storage industry, and if you have been in self storage for any amount of time, you have heard of Scott. He is essentially, he may not call himself this, but the voice when it comes to the legal side of self storage. And has not only more stories, if you will, but has more experience in working with some of the challenges. And thankfully, we don't have a lot of challenges in self-storage, but he is the guy that people go to make sure that they are operating at optimal capacity and making sure that everything that they are doing is not only above board, but is also in line with best business practices that we adhere to in the industry. So with that, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. It's really a pleasure to be with you and always follow your podcast, and it's great to be part of it today.
Well, you and I have been in this industry for quite a while. I've been at this for 18 years. You've been in longer than that, and we see each other from afar, and I've been an admirer of yours from afar and listening to and consume all of your information in terms of your articles and attend your sessions as well. But I'm glad that we are able to finally get a chance to get on the podcast and be able to have a little deeper conversation about what's going on. We call it all things legal and self-storage, but there's a few other things that I'd like to talk about. But in the meantime, for those folks that that may not know of you or at least your backstory, tell Storage Nation a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, it's funny to call myself a self-storage lawyer. That's a unique moniker and sort of special to me. I've been practicing law for over 35 years, started as a real estate and construction lawyer. And one of my first clients was a self-storage developer and contractor. So, they would build the facilities, and we're talking now late 80s, and then ask the silly question, how do I operate them legally now that I've built them? So it sort of opened the door for me to research and learn about the regulatory side of a unique industry, a very special industry. And gosh, we both know, over the past 30 years have watched this industry explode and continue to develop. I would have guessed multiple times that we would have seen the top of the market in self-storage development, but boy, it's still going and there's still a need. And we've changed the sort of the mentality and culture of our society to need self-storage. And the folks that are in the business have just continued to grow with it. So it's really been wonderful to see. And I've loved to be part of it, going back now. I don't feel like I've been doing this for 35 years, but goodness gracious, it's gone very fast, and it's been fun to watch a lot of my clients be extremely successful. And some of them are sort of laying back on their yachts now and appreciating the success, and others are still hard at work building and growing their properties.
Well, that's the beauty of this industry is it is not passive. I don't like it when people use that word passive investment. Certainly there's fewer moving parts than some of the other asset classes that you could be investing in real estate and certainly in developing in. It is not a hobby. It is a business, and you have to walk the four corners and do things the right way. And we found ourselves in our same shoes back in 2005 when we started, and we had to reach out to our attorney for the same purpose and just say, hey, how do we handle these lien sales? And, how do we do these things legally? And, what does it look like to operate in this state versus others? And that is obviously always certainly good. Good insight, and we are extremely thankful for our advisors that have helped us along the way, and I know that you are kind of the watchdog, if you will. As I've listened to your sessions and followed you through the years, yes, you make a living in keeping people safe, but also I've seen you go above and beyond to, you know, keep people from really stepping into some big messes or some pitfalls and major mistakes that they can make that they're just unaware of, whether that be in just general business law or specific to self-storage. So I kind of want to talk a little bit about that, and then also how your career has evolved along with the industry. So, you know, many people come to you, you know, to draft simple docs and, you know, they gain things from their association or other places, but then they want to make sure that they do things correctly. What does that look like when somebody approaches you? What are the more common areas in which you're assisting people from the beginning? And then what are some of the areas that you wish that people would, you know, probably ask you about that they typically don't?
It's a great question. That's what makes the self-storage industry and working with these operators so interesting. There's a multiplicity of legal issues that go with the business of self-storage, the industry of self-storage, right from the dirt that they're considering developing. You know, we get involved in the front side, especially now more and more with, you know, the zoning and moratorium perspective of self-storage development. So we get lots of issues right from the get-go, right from the consideration of should I build the property and what does my local community think about in terms of developing self-storage in my neighborhood? You know, sort of this not in my backyard issue has come up with self-storage. And because of that, and really maybe because of the pressure of a community regarding what self-storage used to be in terms of industrial appearance and usability, they've become these beautiful properties with beautiful facades, beautiful development, unique development. You watch these properties emerge and become part of a community and be proud of the appearance and the uniqueness of these properties. So again, we get involved from the dirt side, from the construction side of making sure that things are done in a proper way with the contractors that they're using. Once it's built, how they hire people and utilize their managers, whether property managers, their own staff under proper employment laws with regard to the operation of the property. Then we get involved in the operation of the facility itself, the regulatory compliance with, just as you said, there's 50 state lien laws that they have to deal with. So if they're multi-state operators, they've got to deal with multiple laws. And then on top of that, you have the federal laws that apply to self-storage operation, the accessibility laws under the ADA, the service members law that affect service members that may be tenants, the bankruptcy laws that may come into effect from a creditor-debtor situation with operators. Then you go to transitions of people selling their properties. It really covers everything. And we really enjoy being sort of the answer resource for operators out there on all these unique aspects of their business. Really what I can say is a self-storage business is a real estate business and a business. So it covers both areas so uniquely and they're intertwined. Makes my day sort of interesting because I'll get calls from A to Z relative to an operator, even experienced ones. They don't have to be new ones. The experienced ones that see new things and need answers and guidance. And so it's really interesting to have been part of that and watch that develop. I have to admit, I sort of know the answers to the questions that are coming. We've written the books knowing that those questions can be answered. And even so, there's still unique aspects, nuances of questions that come up in these communities. And sometimes they're a challenge, sometimes they're easy.
Well, I think you find that as a normal course of business in any business. And I too came from single family houses and apartments and office buildings and industrial warehouses until I found self-storage. And then you find out that, this is just a little different animal, a little more unique in that you're layering an operating business on top of it. And for many reasons, that's why you will see that there are business brokers that are listing, buying and selling self-storage facilities for folks, because it kind of bridges that gap of an operating business and you can either lease the real estate or own it. And so that with those additional nuances brings additional opportunities and liabilities that come along with that as well. And, you know, if you look back, you know, 35 years ago, your purchase agreements were maybe 2 pages and now they're a little longer. And our private placements for our private equity, you know, they're 70, 80 pages, now approaching 90. And that's just in the course of business. We find some gotchas or sometimes some nefarious folks that try to pull one over. And so it makes itself into case law and it makes its way into our documents. And so we do have to continue to to keep up on that. But let's, this is a static industry for the most part. There's not a lot of new things that come along and that dramatically change our industry. I mean, we can look back to, maybe going online and, the kiosks from the way that we operate a facility, to unmanned. But there's not a whole lot that really changes much. I think AI is going to, perhaps upset a number of different industries and force us to look at things a little bit differently. So are there some things right now that you're seeing, Scott, that are maybe either on the horizon that you're dealing with right now that maybe should be on the radar for the rest of us that you see coming that could be a potential liability or at least maybe an opportunity that we need to look out for that you're seeing come across your desk these days?
Well, I have to challenge you with the concept of static in this industry, because to me, it's ever evolving, and the technology side of the industry has forced a legal compliance shift as well. So I never see it as static, I don't see it as old school. I think that the evolution of a first generation to fourth generation facility is amazing to watch, because of the technology and the advances we have. And I mean, we haven't even gotten to the AI part yet, but I think about the inventiveness of operators and vendors in our industry that have created systems that make the operation of self-storage that much more user-friendly and enjoyable and consumer interfacing that are positive, that make the job easier both from the manager-operator side and from the tenant side. And there's been sort of a clash as a result of that evolution, because it's a very old school business. If you think about the brick and mortar side of who we are, we really think about, we build a building, we rent the spaces, we have a lease agreement. And you're certainly right. We've gone from one page lease agreements to 8-page lease agreements. And believe me, blame the lawyers. It's all our fault. Every situation that's come up, we've tried to address a rental agreement provision to try to protect an operator or be fair to a customer in that document. So those have evolved, but it's gone from that sort of brick and mortar contract relationship, landlord tenant, to a multifaceted aspect of, just like you said, kiosk entry into a building or automated gate access entry, Bluetooth locking systems, camera systems that allow visual acuity to watch the property when you're not there, motion sensors inside units to validate concerns from customers about access to their spaces, drones over properties so people can see what's going on. It's so fascinating to watch us catch up to the technology. But sometimes the legal compliance lags behind. So I'm worried about, and I've been talking about this factor, that you can move to the new technology of operations, the remote unmanned, like you've mentioned, this virtual nuance of how to operate a facility. But you've got to have your documents, keep up with your operations, and you've got to train your managers or work with your property management companies to keep up with those operations as well. You can't let one get ahead of the other, or there's going to be gaps that are going to create liability. And I worry about that, because the technology is happening fast and furious, and operators are starting to utilize it to save money in the long term with their operations, which is all great. But I feel like there's a gap sometimes on the legal understanding of these changes and sort of revolutionary issues that they're dealing with. They got to keep up with the law.
Well, and you're right. And thanks for correcting me. I need to take my own advice as I work with my students and just tell them just that, is that this is a business and not a hobby, and you need to keep up with it. And as you're mentioning all these different areas in which we have evolved, behind that comes a set of processes that needs to be put in place, and you need to train your staff, because as I think you've said from stage several times, ignorance is not an excuse when you're, in a court. And if you didn't know, and if your staff member didn't know, and they committed a crime or worse, or there was negligence, just because they didn't know or you didn't know, that is no excuse. So you have to pay attention. This is an operating business, and you have to adhere to the laws of the land before you just embark upon this. It's exciting to do a deal, but then you can't just, there's hunters and there's farmers. And many times the entrepreneurs are more hunters, and they either let the farming just handle itself or not at all. And that's where you get into trouble, is not to attending your field. But that being said, what are you seeing that may be, I guess I'll maybe frame it in a different way. What are some areas in which, you know, you've been around a little while, you can probably, you're more like Wayne Gretzky, I would guess, at this point. You see more than most people have, and also the good and the bad. You know, skating to where the puck is going, where do you see our industry going and changing, say, whether that's in the next 5 to 10 years? What is going to have the biggest impact that we need to be aware of?
Well, I love the analogy to Wayne Gretzky. I'm trying to follow the puck, and it's really been moving pretty quick in our industry, which has been exciting. So let's back up. That one of the things that I've done and been proud to be a part of as part of my connection to the National Self Storage Association is to be a participant in the model of updating each of the state lien laws to modernize those laws to try to keep up with the changes. So if you think about it, just on the most elemental level of emails versus certified mail. So, you know, to move a statutory requirement to electronic mail notice as compared to, you know, green card, certified mail, postal service, is just such a significant change in the industry. But let's talk about just even using the email. Now you need to have some systems in place to follow the ball on the email. Is the email being delivered? Is it bounced back? It's, you know, it comes with, just like you mentioned, this sort of passive active piece of operations. Just because we have the technology of email systems for notification doesn't mean you can just send an email and forget and leave and go, you know, good enough. There's elements of follow-up and compliance that go with something as simple as that. The same thing is true with the movement towards remote virtual properties. Again, it's interesting to say this from the passive active perspective. You can go virtual remote, you can put a kiosk in the system, you can add Bluetooth locking, whatever, but the sort of the expectation of your customer that if they need something, someone is there somehow, adds this level of connectivity that you need in your industry, your facility. So if something goes wrong or there's a question, I'm a big believer that if you're replacing a manager to an unmanned site, that you have to have systems in place, particularly some sort of video oversight system at your property. So it is as if the manager was there. You can see what's going on. If a tenant needs something, they know how to contact someone, whether it be through a mobile application that you have or a phone number on a wall somewhere with a sign. So it's these sort of shifts in our opportunities with the industry that hopefully will lower costs, increase consumer use, reduce liability, also has obligations for the operator to maintain their systems and enhance their systems to replace what otherwise might be a manager on site. I think that just to jump in, I think that that's where the liability comes at for me in terms of following that puck through. The biggest sort of issue for me is protecting a self-storage operator from liability for doing something wrong that they can avoid doing wrong. And the only way they can avoid doing it wrong is knowing how to do it right. And that's why I do the speaking that I do and the articles that I do. Just want to draw some attention to how they should be doing it right to elevate their perspective of how to do things as best as possible, the best practices of self-storage.
Well, and in that comes a lot of wisdom. And Scott, you were very entrepreneurial, first of all, at the beginning of your career, recognizing that there's a need, there's a hole in the marketplace for folks in this ever-growing industry to be able to do things right and to be able to get the knowledge and the information and documents and everything else that the services and really just the information that you provide to keep people from doing things the wrong way. But also then recognizing that, well, how do they know they're doing it wrong if they don't know what the right thing is to do in the first place? So that is also key. And so as we look at our industry and as it continues to mature, you know, this is really one of the last great, call it, you know, the wild, wild west or the last frontier in commercial real estate for rolling up. You know, we've seen this happen in the other industries where, you know, the the ratio is opposite to self-storage, where 20% of all of the units and square footage in self-storage is owned by the REITs, and 80% are still mom and pops on the bottom, and then, you know, smaller players, you know, regional players, and even national that considered aren't a REIT, but just aren't at that level yet. Whereas assisted living and the hospitality industry and office buildings, you know, there's large hedge funds and developers and groups, you know, that it is the opposite. It's only 20% or less that own individually, you know, office buildings, assisted living facilities, and those other asset classes. So as we continue to, you know, evolve, and as more entrants come into our industry from just beginning investors looking for their first facility to other folks that are coming in with a splash and a lot of money behind them, to, you know, scale, develop, buy, roll up, and then sell off to a larger player or be that larger player. What are some of the, perhaps the, you know, since we're talking to you, what are some of the pitfalls that maybe some of the new entrants may overlook as they come into the industry, especially if they're coming in to grow and scale at a very quick pace?
Yeah, it's the growing and scaling part that I know is the most troubling aspect for a new operator. I perceive this as a local business. I mean, it certainly started that way. Real estate guys that probably came from housing or multifamily that had a piece of property that recognized that it was the sort of the best use of that land based upon its location. It may have been off a road. It may have just been in an industrial area, but there was this need for storage. I'll even say warehousing, because we sort of evolved from the warehouse side. Obviously there's a significant legal difference between warehousing and self-storage, but there was a need to store stuff, and it was very much on a local level. So you saw a lot of the developers, and I know you work with a lot of guys that have land that are in a local marketplace that has the need, the sort of built up demand for storage of stuff. And look, they could go to the left on the path and do so sort of warehousing, industrial storage. That's obviously a growing area for business product supply, logistic chain storage, but that's a different business than self-storage, which typically has been on an individual family level. You know, certainly we have business customers, but it's not, large scale storage operations like you see in some of these industrial areas. So going back to these local guys who have developed properties, found a niche, make a good ROI on their self-storage rentals because they built a 20,000, 30,000, maybe 40,000 foot facility has been great. And they've done well. And, you know, then maybe there's an opportunity to expand, or another larger local operator, maybe regional operator, wants to get into that market and will buy their property and expand and grow. And that's just the evolution of real estate. We've always been in that situation where there's someone out there who wants to maybe acquire someone else's property to grow their own platform. And that's been what's happened in self-storage. It's happened in our urban markets to a larger degree, with a lower cap impact, with obviously gigantic valuations of these properties in urban spaces. It's been maybe less so in secondary markets, maybe a little less so in tertiary markets. But everyone who has done this because they found the demand for the need for storage, I think have been successful. Now, we've had our recessionaries up and down with real estate, and that's, I don't think, the fault of the industry or the individual developers. There's always going to be the ups and downs in real estate. We can't help it. You just have to be smart about how you leverage your property and do good pro formas about who's going to use your property, and understand there's going to be delinquencies in certain landlord-tenant relationships. But if you think through that and understand some percentage of liability risk on revenue, these smaller operators can grow into larger operators and continue to grow their platforms. I'm very positive about the continued development of our industry. Now, when you asked about consolidation, look, there's a lot of money out there with large REITs and large operators that are being well-financed by funds around the world. It's really hard to say no to some of that money being offered for these properties. So I do think that there's going to be inevitable consolidation of the market. Probably the number one reason in my head as to why there's consolidation is the fact that there's limited bandwidth in the world for marketing in our World Wide Web. And I'm not a technology guy, but it's, you know, that front page aspect of what people find when they use their mobile apps or their websites, it's a really competitive space. And I think that the big guys have the funds to get higher up on the list. We all know how that works. And I think that has triggered consolidation more than anything because of the need for that space on that website. And people are not going to, you know, the yellow pages for going from AAA aardvark self-storage to, you know, ZZZ xylophone self-storage anymore. It's if you're not A, you got some issues.
Yeah, that's always been one of the challenges in our industry because there's not a whole lot of differentiation. I mean, you could argue that this is a commodity, and to a degree it is. When somebody does a search, you know, what's close to them? If they pop on, you know, their mobile website, does it look clean, attractive, safe, secure, well-lit? You know, if it ticks those boxes, you know, they're not looking for school systems. They're not, you know, looking necessarily even for path of travel because they're going to put it there once or, you know, maybe go back to a couple times. And so we don't, there's not much we can do to differentiate like we can in housing or office buildings, you know, with views and different things of that nature. It's, hey, I got to check this off my list of things to do today is rent a storage unit. And so, and if they've got a special for half off or 1 month free, then I'm in. And so that typically doesn't, those decisions don't go to page two on Google or page three. They are on page one. So I agree 100% that is the game. That is the game in this industry, without a doubt.
Yeah. I think that's one thing goes back to the local aspect of this. And I think that this would be true. I don't have the statistics necessarily of really what is the number one driver of occupancy, whether it be drive-by or internet. It may be pretty close, but a clean, well-lit appearance of safe and secure properties, to me, is the number one differentiator of a property. And it goes back to the first thing you said about active versus passive owners. If people are going to invest in self-storage, they need to be proud of their property, and they would want their family to rent there. And I really think that if, you know, and this goes back to, we all think this way about our businesses. We want to be proud of what we do and hold it in high esteem as a member of a community. I think that if you keep your properties that way, that may itself be a differentiator in many ways that people feel comfortable storing with you and have that perception of care from the operator or owner of the property.
I would agree. And that pride of ownership is pretty evident. If somebody were to walk onto the site, I mean, the goal of our website is to either get a reservation or a rental and for them to come down and not be surprised that the picture on the website, you know, that it matches and that resides with the person who is overseeing that property or the site manager. And we can tell pretty quickly if we're getting ready to buy something, if there's a pride of ownership when we walk around and my managers, as I walk around with them, you know, if they're not picking up cigarette butts while I'm walking with them, then we've got a problem because I'm not so important that they can't go and do something or at least notice. And if they're not even noticing, then we have to have a discussion because that does come out in the consumer's eyes. And yeah, their stuff is going inside of a box and they're not going to come back for another 6 months or so maybe to look at it again. But they want to know that somebody is minding the store, if you will. And the store is the place where their stuff is being stored. So I want to pivot, and maybe it's not even a pivot, but as we, you know, we're talking about different asset classes, and, you know, over the years, we've had to get somewhat creative in some instances to allow the city planning committee, the board's zoning, you know, to allow self-storage. And as you mentioned, NIMBYism is a real thing, and you've dealt with that. You've been on the front lines of that for several years. And so, you know, we've added in certain buildings if we're converting, you know, retail on the ground level, because that's what people see in storage above. And it's kind of hidden, you know, not really there, but found on the internet and by signage and just a number of creative ways of allowing the city to see that we're good, quiet neighbors and it is something that is needed. But I'm also seeing, you touched on the fact that, you know, logistics is, it's a popular asset class, industrial, with Amazon and everything else that feeds Amazon, with them being the driver and, you know, the rush to the last mile right now, where we're starting to see where storage is beginning to fit in. You know, we're incorporating this in some of our facilities as well, with some larger sizes and areas of our buildings that are set aside for, you know, more traditional, almost logistics type businesses. and these customers that we could, you know, allow to come in. And we're also seeing a huge rise, you know, internationally in terms of, you know, what storage looks like, from self-storage, which is new in some markets, and it's evolving from a logistics business where people just need smaller spaces. Do you, I mean, take either or both, do you see storage evolving in the States to become more like a logistics, and we kind of blend to, you know, meet the needs of our clients that need that last mile, like an Amazon or other places, and maybe some larger buildings being built or converted that handle both? And internationally, do you see a rise where the model from the beginning begins to look like that? Or am I just off base?
No, I don't think you're off base at all. I mean, the mixed use concept for self-storage as an element of being approved as part of the planning department's acceptance of properties has gone up exponentially. I mean, the ability to add a retail component, maybe even a housing component on top of self-storage for a mixed-use opportunity of that space, as space becomes less and less available in certain areas that people want to be. I mean, this sort of like live-work-play concept, self-storage, I think fits into that because the floor plans of some of these homes are smaller. People still want to have access to their property. So the self-storage piece, I think, works in perfectly in a what would likely be, as you're describing, an urban area where there's limited footprint and there's an opportunity and need for self-storage, a demand for self-storage. And the only way you're going to get it is to be flexible enough to accept a mixed-use opportunity. The combination of self-storage with this last-mile logistics is a fascinating new question, and it becomes a zoning issue. It becomes a statutory compliance issue, because warehousing by itself is entirely different from self-storage. So I'm not here to say that you can't do both, but you can't do both because you want to do both. You can only do both if someone will allow you to do both, and then your operational issues are separate. You're going to need a demising wall of demising walls between your businesses, because you can't mix self-storage and last-mile logistics. But I think what you're saying is so true. And we have seen it in the European market. In fact, just recently at this SSA conference, we were able to talk with and meet with the international representatives of a lot of these self-storage operators around the world. And they're seeing the same evolution of their business for logistics and for self-storage as you're describing. But they have more often than not, they have more opportunity for land use development than we do. We've really done a sort of sometimes a poor job in our communities of just not leaving enough space for the use that we really need. And I know we're coming back to that and reusing properties and rethinking the issue. Overseas, they're just at the beginning of a lot of this development, so they have a lot more opportunity to be creative from the front end.
Yeah, we're seeing And as business continues to evolve in general, the mixture of either co-working space or like a flex space that is included in not only logistics that's been around forever, but also in self-storage too. And we've had some, I don't want to say fits and starts or experiments, but what we thought would be a large uptake in the, you know, incubator space or flex space at our facilities and creating room for it. Although it was taken and people will have an address, but they didn't utilize it. And maybe that was the only reason. We just assumed that there would be a little bit more of an uptake. But certain markets, it's just the opposite of that. And they are clamoring for those spaces. And that was largely driven. I was in industrial space. We had warehouses back in 07 and in 08. And when these businesses shut down or when people were let go, well, they went out and bought their own truck and sets of tools, and they needed some warehousing and storage. And so they just wanted 10,000 square foot or 5,000 square foot to start their own business in the same industry in which their employer just let them go because of the economy. The demand was still there, but their employers just couldn't keep them. And so I sense that, you know, as we head into, if, you know, depending on whether you agree we're in it or heading into it, a recession, I think we're going to see that all over again. And there's going to be another wave of entrepreneurialism that's going to drive some of that space that I think is in between the big warehouses and self-storage, that, you know, these more entrepreneurial businesses and storage customers are going to need.
And I don't have a problem with that. I just want to alert people to recognize as they pivot to demand for their space, for their real estate space, these businesses, as they transition maybe from less self-storage temporarily to more commercial space or less self-storage to an office warehouse scenario, just like you're describing, They have to recognize that that's a shift in their business operations, their insurance, their land use, their zoning restrictions. You have to be careful that you, just what we were saying, there's a gap in decision-making and movement in a business. Sometimes that catches up with the legal. I unfortunately have been on the other end of a phone call when a business has been shut down because they did not have the proper zoning for what they were doing. They did not have the proper insurance for what they were doing. They were quick to fit the needs of their customer without thinking about the obligations of the law. And unfortunately, you know, it's very hard to come back from those decisions where you're not thinking through some of the legal ramifications before you make those decisions. And I hate the fact that law is in the way of business opportunity, but it is what it is. I mean, that's why I apologize in advance for being a lawyer so many times, is because we do make it more difficult for compliance purposes for being a business owner. But it is what it is. Until we can make those laws go away, people have to make sure they understand what the laws are to stay out of trouble.
Well, Scott, you never have to apologize for that, for keeping us from stepping anything. And don't forget, we always love our lawyers that are on our side. We just really don't like the lawyers that may be on the other side of any other issue or challenge that we have. Those are the only ones we don't like. But you're in our camp, at least hopefully, for the most part. And yes, to maybe make a very simple delineation, self-storage is self-storage, and that you as an owner do not have access, and you do not create a bailment or take any liability for the contents that is in a self-storage unit. It is the client's unit. Warehousing is completely opposite, in which it's open, and you put somebody in charge of basically, you know, picking and pulling things down, and depending upon the style of business, completely different set of laws, completely different set of liabilities. And the first step in guarding yourself is with insurance, as you mentioned as well. So completely different set of guidelines in what is what you insure and the type of insurance that you have to have as well. And yes, zoning, and hopefully everybody is starting there as well. So that we could spend another hour with a masterclass on just that, the difference in it, Scott. But thank you for bringing that up and recognizing that. I just want to have a conversation to see if that's what you're seeing, is if there is a morphing of storage into bleeding over into and including other asset classes that we may see on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about self-storage, though, and I think it's true what you said, and we've seen this grow in our industry, the self-storage industry, is as long as there's demand for people to have a place for their property, their stuff, there will always be a need for self-storage. And I do believe that we're providing a true unique service opportunity to our communities by having self-storage. It's just like you said, can't forget the word self in storage in our business, because all we do as real estate owners is rent space suitable for storage. It's a unique, just like you said, non-bailment relationship, no care, custody, or control of the property. We're not storing it for them. We're just giving them the space to store their property. And I truly believe, based upon the analytics and statistics that I've seen about the use of self-storage, we're still relatively low in the national use of self-storage. And as we continue to grow our communities, both in an urban side, a secondary market, tertiary market, you know, as we continue to develop those areas, people need a place to put their things. And I think self-storage will continue to grow along with that demand. You know, again, we're going to have our ups and downs, as all real estate cycles do, because it is a real estate business. The valuations of the properties may be affected based upon occupancies. But I also believe this to be true about self-storage. I think we're very much a recession-resistant industry. We've done very well to manage, because whether things are good or bad, there's this transitional aspect of people's lives. And while they're in those transitional aspects, they need a place to store their property. And self-storage has met that need. And I applaud the operators, both small and big, for understanding that psychology of need for the storage of their property. And that's why they've been successful. I mean, again, I come at it only from the point of view of I understand the need, and I understand that they're building it to provide that need, I just want to make sure that they meet the rules of doing it as they're operating their businesses. And I will tell you, it's not just the small guys who make mistakes. The big guys do too, that even with staffs of lawyers, they will be the first to admit they can't keep up with all the changes in the laws. They do their best to stay up to date on all of these ever-evolving statutes and other laws that impact their business, consumer protection laws, access disability laws, creditors' rights, times to contact debtors by phone or email. There's a million laws out there that have to be followed. There's no guilt that goes along with not being up to date on all of them, but trying to stay educated on as many as possible is really a good task.
Well, as we talk about it many times in many conversations in our mastermind, which is a group of folks that are growing and scaling, you know, it's all about a team. We can't know it all. And, you know, all of us have our superpowers. And usually if we're at the heads of our organizations, it is to go out and do deals, is to find good pieces of dirt to develop on and good acquisitions to, you know, bring into the portfolio. And most of us that are geared towards that, we don't really like to spend a lot of time, or it's not our forte to keep up on HR issues, on lien laws and those other things. You know, again, back to the hunter-farmer. And so it is crucial and it's imperative that you have good CPAs that are keeping an eye on the numbers, that you have HR professionals, whether outsourced or in-house, and that you have attorneys. And, you know, we arguably have it on three fronts on our end, and that is looking over the documents on the acquisition. It's looking over the operations side and the liabilities, which we've been talking about mainly, and also in the security side. You know, we raise private equity. We do funds and we do private placements, and having folks that have expertise in those areas to, once again, keep us legal, compliant, and not out of trouble so that we can do the things that we are good at and like to do, which is go find and do more deals. And so it is about a team and having, you know, you don't, Storage Nation, I'm giving you all permission, you don't have to know it all. You just have to have the right team members that do know and own their space. And that's why we brought Scott on here as well, because he owns this space and is the person to be able to go to figure out, not only figure out, but to keep us from making those mistakes.
So the number one thing that I like to do the most is educate and protect. Again, it's such a good industry with such amazing people, hardworking folks that really have invested their effort and energy and wealth into this industry. It's nice to see the success stories, and I try with what I do in terms of information that we try to send out and be a resource for people to protect them from making those mistakes. You know, I do a monthly newsletter through our firm. We have a program through the National Association called the Self-Storage Legal Network. You know, there's lots of articles that you see, and as you mentioned, the magazines in the industry. There's a lot of information out there. So there's always a way for operators to get answers to their questions. It doesn't necessarily involve having to call a lawyer. There's a lot of resources out there of published materials that we've been doing for years that hopefully can be guidebooks for operators. I know you also have those resources for your folks, which is great. I mean, it is true what you said in a lot of ways, that the industry is a simple business with sort of concerns along the way, but a lot of those questions have already been answered that they have. They just need to go to get the resources to help them answer those questions to stay on the straight and narrow.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time. And as we wind down, you know, my crystal ball has been in the shop for a while. And for the past 6 months, I've been asking all of my guests, and we follow a number of economists and experts in the industry, in our industry, and just in business in general, and looking at the financial markets. And, you know, we're looking at, again, whether you think we're in a recession or heading into one, you know, we've been preparing for this in a number of different ways and doing our best to predict what's going to happen. But where do you see the industry in 2024 in terms of, maybe let's just talk about activity level or any other changes that you see? Is there going to be an increased productivity, increased activity on the acquisition development side? I know we're heading into, you know, a time where the Fed say they're going to keep rates maybe where they're at. We've got an election year, but just some an overall take from your viewpoint, what you're seeing and dealing with a number of other operators and other looking at other nuances and happenings in our industry and in this space right now, what are some of the predictions that you have for 2024?
Yeah, I wish I had my crystal ball working as well, but I'll do the best I can. I mean, I've recognized that there is a cycle where they're in it or coming to it. I think we all recognize that. We've seen occupancy rates go down. We've seen rental rates slow, if not decrease. We've seen discounting go up. It's sort of an inevitable step back from the heyday of COVID and post-COVID, where people were rushing to put stuff in storage because they needed to work out of their homes. So it's just this reality of a cycle. Whether that recession will be deep, I've heard no, but I think that in the context of self-storage, development will inevitably slow. I think that because of the pressure on, just like you said, interest rates that impact loans, there's going to have to be more sales of operators that did not prepare for the leverage of their properties relating to lower occupancy and lower revenue to meet those loan deals that they had done maybe only a few years ago when everything was looking upwards and nothing was looking downwards. But that's okay because we've been there before. Operators were smart. Lending institutions were smart about this cycle. I don't think they let anyone get way over their skis. I think there won't be any foreclosures or bank repossessions of self-storage. I think what you'll see is a nice slow move to operators who may get a good return on their dollar for opportunity to sell their properties to those mid-tier regional and some national operators who are hungry for earnings that want additional properties. So we'll see that happening. I just think it will be a more just a bottom line slowdown in development and more of an up push towards consolidation and restructuring of these debts. And again, in a positive way, I don't see a frenzied movement in our industry one way or the other. But there will always be storage. There will always be a need for storage. Whether we're going to be at 92% occupancy or 85% occupancy or 70% of occupancy, as long as that loan to value wasn't, 90%, these operators are going to be fine, but some may have pushed the limits based upon their performas, and those are the ones that will want to sell, maybe need to sell, and boy, there will be people out there that are willing to buy. So I'm not worried about that cycle on the business side, but the development side will be tough. Not just tough because of the industry and the compression of supply and demand. But again, going back to zoning regulations, going back to lending, that it will be at higher rates that they may have seen for a long time, and underwriting requirements that will require financials that some of the operators may not be able to meet. They're going to have to look for alternative and creative ways to do these projects.
I would agree wholeheartedly. I think there will be some challenges, and we are seeing, on the macro level, there's a lot of troubled commercial loans out there in different asset classes. But even those, we're seeing that the lenders aren't so willing and ready to foreclose and bring them back on the balance sheet. They're doing workouts, workarounds. They're doing some short sales and, other measures that that folks have taken in the past. And they're not so quick to ring up the attorney's fees and then have something sitting on their balance sheet or a property that's not producing, decaying because nobody's minding the store in the marketplace as well. I don't think that we're going to see the cliff like we saw with Lehman Brothers back in 2007. That just doesn't.
Oh gosh, I hope not. I don't see it. I think
I don't either.
I'd like to think we learned our lessons.
I think so. Yeah. And you're right. I think there were some safeguards that were put in place, and those lending practices were pretty much we learned most of the lessons that needed to be learned during that time frame. And so I don't see a whole lot of really big gotchas or pitfalls this time around. I may be proven wrong. It could be a couple of natural disasters or a war or something that may cause things to go in a different direction. But I believe this one is going to be a little bit softer landing, as you mentioned as well. So Well, Scott, once again, thanks so much. Appreciate you taking time out and speaking to Storage Nation and just sharing more of your wisdom and knowledge and maybe a little more peek behind the scenes. What is the best way for people to be able to connect with you? And I know you've got a number of free resources out there that you can point them to as well. So where would people go to learn more about what you're doing?
Well, contact me directly through my law firm, my legal practice, which is Weissman Zucker. So it's scott@wzlegal.com, or through the National Association of the Self-Storage Legal Network, which is selfstoragelaw.com. We're happy to be a resource for operators. If we can't help you, we'll direct you to people that can. Scott, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. What you're doing with your folks are great, and continue wishes for great success. And it's been fun doing this journey together. So it's always great to work with others like you to better our industry.
Well, it's a great industry to be a part of. As I mentioned, I've been in a number of asset classes and got involved in a number of different groups and organizations and associations and all of those. And, you know, this community is more like a family, and everybody's willing to share and elevates, the tide for all boats. And, you know, we can all compete, but do it in a friendly manner and keep, that 5% close to our chest. But it's been an incredible journey and a great community to be a part of. And you're one of those people that make it that way. So I appreciate you as well.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Take care.
Hey, gang, wait. Three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the Self-Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.